This is David Duke. And this is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Web Radio Broadcast, broadcasting to the entire world with news and information of vital importance to Europeans and people of European descent, no matter where they may live upon the earth. Ladies and gentlemen, today I'm going to continue on with a copy of my press conference and academic conference, actually, as well, in Kyiv, Ukraine. This was at the university at Kyiv. In fact, it's a beautiful campus. It's a campus that's high on the hill in Kyiv. It looks like a typical large American university campus, beautiful buildings, a wonderful park with statues. They even have an historical park based on the art of ancient Ukraine there. This university is the largest university of Ukraine. It has over 50,000 students. And unfortunately, the Jewish extremists are trying to close down the university. Why? Simply because the university dares to allow expressions of anti-Zionism. Now, the university doesn't limit its expressions in opposition to Israel. There are many professors, many individuals, and many students who are, in fact, of Jewish descent. There are people, certainly, who share different views, but the school and the president has had international conferences in opposition to Zionism. Because of this, the world Jewish extremists have decided that this university has to go. And they're using every technique available to them, pressure, blackmail basically against Ukraine, and any sort of underhanded technique you could possibly imagine to try to close in this university. The technique that they're using right now is to try to allege that every private institution in Ukraine should be closed down because only public educational institutions should be allowed. Now, that's really a communist concept, and the person, in fact, in charge of education in Ukraine is himself an individual of that persuasion, at least formally. And he doesn't believe in private higher education. Of course, they've already closed over 400 institutions in the nation of Ukraine. And they look at that, this individual looks at that as some sort of great achievement. And he says that they want to close down 120 more institutions. He was asked during the press conference about this, well, why is it 120? What's the reason for 120? He says, well, that's our target. That's our objective. And yet, ladies and gentlemen, obviously, this will lower the educational opportunity for many people in Ukraine. In fact, about 30% of the men and women with degrees in the Ukrainian government were educated at the university where I received my doctorate and where I lecture. So, ladies and gentlemen, we have a crazy situation going on, and they've actually made some decisions already against the university. They've closed down some of the branches, and they come ever closer to trying to close down the university in its totality. And it's a terrible travesty of justice. These universities, recognized by the United Nations, by the international educational institutions, they have exchange programs at many other major universities in Europe and around the world. Many of their professors, in fact, are head of many of the departments of other major universities, both in Eastern and Western Europe, people who've been educated at their school, people who have taught at their university. They don't really say school in Eastern Europe. They never use the word school for university as we do in the United States. But it's just a crisis, ladies and gentlemen, of rights and freedoms. The president of the university is a man who has incredible courage. Dr. Shokin actually started the Conservative Party in Ukraine, and the Jewish extremists did everything they could to shut down that party. In fact, they went to work, and they actually sent letters from the Israeli head of state to the Ukrainian president demanding that Dr. Shokin not be allowed on the ballot. That's right, that he and his party not be allowed in the ballot because he was saying things opposed to Israel. what in the hell, and excuse the French, what in the hell has Israel got the right to tell any other country who can run for office and to try to strip the democratic freedoms away from an individual, trying to restrict and stop people from exercising their rights of freedom of speech, expression, and political participation? That's supposedly what the West is all about. But, you know, when it comes to the Jewish extremists, you can throw all the rules right out the window. That's simply the way it is. Well, today I'm going to continue on with part two of this lecture, to the end of the lecture and then the beginning of the question and answer period, and we'll save that for future broadcasts. As you know, also, there are big events happening in Hungary. I was just in Hungary for a few days, and I was very amazed by the incredible courage and brilliance of the opposition to the government in that country. They don't want to see Hungary become a pawn of the New World Order. And basically what they say is that under the communists, they had almost a complete Jewish control. Now, again, to some leaders and some... And I say leaders because I know there are many diplomats and people in political activities around the world who listen to my program, some who may be opposed to me, but I think they know that this website, davidduke.com, is one where they can receive a true rendition of what's happening, or at least thought-provoking ideas, because everything I say I can back up. And let me tell you, the government of Hungary in the 1950s and all the way to the 90s, under the communists, was one basically not of Russian communists, but Jewish communists. That's right, Jewish communists control the entire government. David Irving, in his book Uprising, says it very well when he talks about the fact that the uprising in Hungary was as much an anti-Jewish uprising, maybe even more so, than an anti-Russian uprising. It was fueled by that. And ladies and gentlemen, that's exactly what we're talking about here. But the odd thing is, and again, this is something you can find repeated continuously throughout history. I remember the Who song where they say, "Meet the new boss, the same as the old boss." Well, obviously, communism fell in Hungary. The people didn't like communism. The revolt, of course, cut out the communist symbol in the middle of the Hungarian flag. In fact, it's very odd to see the symbol of a revolt with a big hole in the middle of the flag, but that's their symbol. Kind of a neat symbol, in fact. And, ladies and gentlemen, they overthrew communism. Finally, communism fell in the early 90s. And how has it been replaced? Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's been replaced by so-called capitalism, by the New World Order. And you know what? It's the same set of powerful Jewish extremists that control the country, that controlled the country before. In fact, in the transition from a socialist economy to a privatization, who do you think received the lion's share of the resources and the property and the factories and the businesses that the communist government operated? It's the same thing that happened in the Soviet Union, ladies and gentlemen, where 10 of the 11 oligarchs now are Jewish. Well, the same thing happened in Hungary. So here are the Hungarian people. They're hungry. They have a very low salary. Prices are expensive. It's very hard for them to afford their rent, to afford their food. They pay about the same prices as we do for food, and yet the income is very low. And they say, okay, we had a revolution, and now the same people that ran the communist government are running the government we have today, and we are in the same position of want. We're in the same position of oppression. So that's the fuel that's going on behind the current revolt. It was sparked, of course, by the president's comments that is very untoward comments, which were leaked from a tape recording, where he said, yes, we lied during the elections. We lied about the Hungarian economy. We lied and lied and lied. He said, of course, well, he wasn't just talking about himself, but, you know, the government in general. But this has sparked a tremendous response. The response has been what you call right wing. There's no question about it. It is motivated by people just like us, like most of the listeners anyway of this broadcast, most of the posters on Stormfront, most of the readers of davidduke.com. And I must salute them These are not terrorists, ladies and gentlemen. They have not gone out and blown up any civilians. They have not assassinated any people. They have fought in the streets, much like our forefathers fought against the British with some skirmishes in the streets. In fact, they weren't really as radical as the revolutionaries of the United States of America. They didn't actually fire on any troops. But they did cause a ruckus. In fact, at one point, some of the demonstrators on the memorial to 1956, to the great heroism of that time, they actually commandeered one of the Soviet T-34 tanks that was paraded at that time, you know, as a commemoration. They actually commandeered it and were driving it up the street. Incredible acts of heroism by these people, and they really have stood up. But unlike the great world applause that happened when people have stood up against communism in many of the Eastern countries and what happened in China, there's no great world applause. Why? Because the forces of so-called capitalism, the forces of the international global community, the international globalist philosophy, which is essentially a Zionist philosophy, they are opposed to this change because they want to control Hungary, just as they did, which is sounds strange again, during the times of the Bolshevik control. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for being with me, and I hope you enjoyed this broadcast of this tape from Kyiv. And by the way, I need to explain to you that during the course of this press conference and academic lecture, the Ukrainian translator, Perevodchik is what we'd say in that language, took my text and translated it into Ukrainian for the audience. Now, in the process of this tape, you'll hear that occasionally, but we pretty much edited the Ukrainian translation out so the tape would move along quicker and you wouldn't get bored, because I know there's very few of our listeners that understand Ukrainian. And I'll be back with you in a few moments. Between the way they bring together the United States and Israel, and yet Israel has really not been a friend of the United States at all. Let me give you a couple examples. First, the United States worked very hard to remove the Syrian presence in Lebanon. The United States was on very good terms with the Lebanese government. America had tremendous amounts of business investment in Lebanon. Billions of dollars. 25,000 Americans lived and worked in Lebanon. And under this circumstance, this supposed ally of America attacks Lebanon with Americans still in harm's way. All American investment, business, American friendship with Lebanon was destroyed. Let me give another example. Some people try to explain, and usually it's the radical Jewish extremists making this explanation. They'll say that it's big oil, American big oil, American big business that's behind the pro-Israel policy. But think about it. Would it be advantageous to American big oil to support Israel with no oil reserves against the Arab world, which holds huge amounts of oil reserve? And finally, back to the terrorist issue. Few people outside of the United States even understand that Israel has even committed terrorism against the people of the United States of America. During the Egyptian-Israeli war, in what was called the Lavan Affair, agents of the Israeli government made terrorist attacks against American installations in Egypt. Terrorist bombings, with the intention of blaming the Egyptians for these bombs. But perhaps by an act of God, one of the terrorists' bombs blew up, and he was apprehended. And as a result, the entire Israeli operation was stopped. The Israeli defense minister, Phinehas Lavan, had to resign because the operation failed. So Israel admitted they committed this terrorism, but no change came in American policy. Not only did we not bomb Israel or attack Israel in return, the American money kept flowing to Israel. In 1967, Israel attacked an American ship, the USS Liberty. And even our American Secretary of State, Dean Rusk, said the attack was deliberate and purposeful. This is the morality of Israel. Now we face a new crisis. A crisis that will make the Iraq war seem like child's play.
Because these neoconservative warmongers are trying to create a war with Iran. Iran could be the beginning of a new world war. Iran is many times the size of Iraq, with a very dedicated populace to its government, with tremendous military equipment and incredible will. Even though Israel has nuclear weapons, illegally, I might add, they won't even allow Iran to pursue a nuclear program, even if there are inspections. And any day, we may see the experience of American bombing of Iran. The ramifications of this kind of policy are drastic, catastrophic. Iran could certainly choke off the Straits of Hormuz and basically choke about a third of the world's oil supply off completely. The economic effects on every nation in the world, including Ukraine, would be incredibly catastrophic. The escalation of the war on terrorism, the so-called terrorist problem, would be, again, catastrophic. I believe the men and women of this university, I believe the men and women of Ukraine, and I believe the average American are people of conscience and people who want peace and decency. We've come to a terrible place in history. Those who want peace and human decency and human rights and freedom, they are called extremists. We are not extremists. We believe in the values of our Western Christian civilization. And I am here primarily to inform you of the process of these American foreign policies and to tell you that although governments in the United States and England may be opposed to the natural rights of the people of Ukraine, try that, that there are growing numbers of Americans and Europeans and others all over the world who want freedom, not just for themselves, but also for the people of this country. Ukraine is a beautiful country. It's a shame that you continue to hear about the atrocities of the Second World War in terms of the Jewish problem, but not hardly any conduct or any sort of equal time for the terrible atrocities that occurred against the people of Ukraine. You're a great people with a great heritage, and I salute you, and I bring you greetings from your friends all over the world. Thank you very much.
Великий народ, великие люди, и я приветствую вас и передаю привет со всего мира. Спасибо.
Now, I'm willing to take whatever questions you like and don't hold back.
Я бы хотел спросить, вы можете спросить все, что угодно, и попытаться
The organization, specific organization I represent, is called EURO, standing for European American Unity and Rights Organization. It's dedicated to the right of all people of European descent to defend their own heritage and their own rights.
Цель этой организации защитить права всех европейцев, живущих в Европе.
And we believe that Europeans should, our own nations, the great majorities of our own nations, should control our own media and our own government.
Мы верим, что любая нация должна контролировать свое собственное правительство и свою собственную прессу.
You know, that shouldn't be a very strange concept.
Это не должно звучать очень странно.
Isn't it normal?
Разве это не нормально?
Shouldn't a nation be dedicated to 95 or 96 or 97% of its population rather than 2 or 3%?
Разве не 96-97% населения должны жить ради себя, а не только ради 2% этой же нации?
And yet the Zionists are manipulating so many of our governments around the world. These Jewish extremists have a right to express themselves.
Эти еврейские экстремисты имеют право выразить.
They too have a right of free speech. I'm not suggesting we jail them as they try to jail us. If you remember, when I received my doctorate from one Jewish leader in Ukraine,
когда еврейский лидер Украины,
said that the academic robes that I wore and that the other professors at this university wore should be changed to prison uniforms. We don't suggest that for our enemies.
Мы, конечно, не требуем этого.
But we are determined that our own countries will be led by our own people. If Israel is a Jewish country and has the right to be led in the interest of the Jewish people, the majority, then we have a right in Ukraine and in the United States and in all through Europe and the world to represent our own country. We have correspondents and members of this organization throughout almost every nation of Europe. We don't currently have a chapter here in Ukraine, but those of you who are interested in getting involved in this, I'll be happy to talk with you, and you could correspond with us, and we could get you involved in our programs. Now, I don't. That's an expression. What I said was this: if the Russian people who are opposed to Zionism, Russia, as you know, is the largest and most resource-rich of any nation of the world. I think it is essential that the people in Russia and those in Russia who share our opinions on these issues win their freedom. If they win their freedom, they will certainly be important to this worldwide struggle for our freedom. But let me make it clear to you. I believe in the equality of all nations, big and small. And I know the problems that Ukraine had in terms of the Bolshevik movement for so many years. Millions of Ukrainians suffered and died because of the Jewish Bolshevik movement. And those who are not aware of it, I hope all of you in this room are aware of the Jewish domination of the early Bolshevik movement. But I want to tell you something, and I say it this way. Not only were you oppressed by the Jewish Bolsheviks, but the Russian people have been oppressed by the Jewish Bolsheviks. And the American people have been oppressed by the Jewish extremists. And what we've got to do now in the world, if we're going to survive, is bring the nationalists of all countries together to resist the power of the Jewish extremists in Zionism. In the process, I also say that the first rule that we have among nations is we oppose internationalism and globalism, but at the same time we respect the individual sovereignty of every country.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you found that press conference and lecture interesting. And we will continue on with the question and answer period in the upcoming days of the David Duke Internet Web Radio broadcast. In fact, we have one question from an individual who was the translator, the go-between, between Khrushchev and Kennedy during the crisis that took place during that period of history in the early 1960s, and many other very interesting questions from the members of the audience. Ladies and gentlemen, that's it for today. I hope that you all understand that your support enables me to do this program, to keep it going, to keep my traveling, work, speeches. I've got some major appearances coming up. Excuse the fact that I've been missing some days on this broadcast. I know many of you endeavor to hear this broadcast every day, and you miss it when I'm not here giving my take on the world events. But I've been speaking, I've been lecturing, I've been working every day. I have many countries to go to over the next few days and weeks, including the United States. And I hope to really continue to do this work of waking the world up. That Jewish supremacism is going into a number of different languages. I'll have some major announcements on that shortly. The impact of the book is incredible. It's increasing all the time. It's growing. And it's certainly on its way to becoming one of the world's best-selling books. And I think, of course, I may be prejudiced being the author of this book, but I've had so many people tell me that there's no better introduction to the problem of Jewish extremism and Zionism and Israeli criminality and the Israeli control of the American government than this book. And this book, of course, long predates the paper of Walt and Mearsheimer from Harvard University. And you can say this book is way ahead of the curve and that I have been way ahead of the current political thinking as contained by the Walt and Mearsheimer paper, Israel and U.S. Foreign Policy, which was done in the premier university, the premier school of government in the United States of America, the Harvard John F. Kennedy School of Government. So, ladies and gentlemen, your work and your help enables us to stay ahead and to educate so many millions of people all over the world, and I can, if I could just share with you all the emails I get from important people, many of them whom remain anonymous, you would really begin to see the impact. And if we don't have your financial support, it's impossible for me to continue this work. I'm living in an apartment that's just costing a few hundred dollars a month with utilities when I'm over here. I scrape every penny to try to spend what I can on this cause. That's what I'm doing. I mean, I'm dedicated to this. This is what my life is about. And I don't want to tell you that I'm making many or great sacrifices, because I enjoy this. It gives my life meaning to speak and to write and to work and to spread this message around the world. As I've said before, I consider myself almost like the Johnny Appleseed of this enlightenment. And though for those of you in Europe who are listening to this broadcast, Johnny Appleseed was the individual who went throughout the Midwest and other parts of the United States spreading millions of seeds for the apple trees, which now dot so many areas and have brought so much pleasure and joy and beauty to so many areas in the United States of America. Well, I'm the Johnny Appleseed, perhaps, of anti-Zionism, the Johnny Appleseed of European awakening. And I'm going to do my best to continue to awaken our people to the dire threat that our people face. And truly, Zionism is not just a threat to Europe, even though the Zionists have certainly been behind the massive immigration in the United States. Again, I can prove that. You can read this website, read the articles. They still today, for instance, the Jewish Conference of Major Presidents of Jewish Organizations, for instance, the Hebrew Immigrant Society, one of the major immigration organizations, they still support and are the primary force behind the change in America from a European nation to a mestizo and a non-European nation. They've done the same thing in Europe. And, of course, the media, the Hollywood media and the print media around the world, which is really centered in both Hollywood and New York, and that also affects a great deal of Europe, this media is propagandizing our people and telling us it's good that we will be wiped off the face of the earth, that Europe and America will be ethnically cleansed of our people. And again, ladies and gentlemen, when I say these things, I'm not speaking against the other peoples of the world. In fact, I believe that every people and every nation have the right to exist, to preserve their culture and their heritage and their values. I'm very much opposed to globalism. I'm very much opposed to the United States creating an empire. I'm opposed to America having 60 bases around the world. I'd much rather have just one line of soldiers across the Mexican-American border than have any bases overseas. That's where our threat is. It's not the border with Iran that Iraq has, or with Syria that's a threat to us. It's what's going on in the American border. At the same time, ladies and gentlemen, I want to preserve European culture, European heritage. I love our traditions. I'm going to do everything I can to preserve that, not with hatred, not with oppression, not with supremacy, but simply letting our people live and exist. And they cannot do that unless we control this immigration, shut it down, and hopefully increase our birth rates, make a healthier society for our people, and create a more enduring value system for our heritage. So, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for being with me, and we'll have more of the Kyiv conference in just a few days. I appreciate all of your support. I need it. I hope you'll take a minute right now to give us some of the support that we truly need. Thanks so much. Bye-bye now.
This has been a David Duke Worldwide Web Radio broadcast. For more information and to support our vital work, please visit www.davidduke.com.